welcome to The Garden Show. My name is Kitty LaBounty.
And I'm Molly Kabler.
And we are here on not a live show today, but I think you will like this show. This is a show that is going to be our top 10 flowers, our favorites. And there was a little bit of debate about which ones they were, but it actually wasn't very much debate. So these are legitimate top 10 flowers to grow in our particular climate. We, for you vegetable lovers, we will hit vegetables at a later show, so we will not neglect you.
And really, a lot of this is just our personal preferences, so it's not necessarily the top 10 easiest or the top 10 cheapest or the top 10 showiest. This is, you know, and yet there's elements of that, and we'll talk about that in our list. It's really about the kind of the plants that we can't live without.
That's right. Or we will not choose to live without if we have a choice. And the very first one out of my mouth when we were writing this list was the blue poppies, the Mechanopsis. It's like, what a gift. This beautiful blue plant that loves our climate. How could you not grow it?
One of the fun things about it, in addition, is that there aren't a lot of places that this poppy can grow easily. We have exactly the right growing conditions. And in my mind, if you have a stunning plant like this that likes your growing conditions, why not? Why would you not go with this plant?
Right. There's so few things that we have like the climate for in terms of growing that are, you know, cultivated plants. And this is definitely one of them. So Mechanopsis, it's the blue poppy. There's several different species. The only one that isn't blue that is generally in commerce around here is Cambrica, the Welsh poppy. So the Welsh poppy is this crazy self-seeding bright yellow annual. So make sure you get one of the blue ones.
They can be hard to find in commerce at the nursery or whatever because they're not an easy plant to grow. And so you know, they're not available much because people would be so disappointed trying to buy it and grow it in North Dakota.
Right. So usually Alaska distributors would have them, or the Northern Pacific Northwest, or maybe even British Columbia. What they do like, though, this is my one little hint for the Mechanopsis, is they like to have some food. So you do need to give them some compost every year, or some sort of, you know, rich nutrient infusion to have them doing their best. And they actually don't like too much sun. I learned that the hard way.
Right. If you live in a pretty exposed spot and it's really sunny, they burn a little bit and they don't do well. And if your clump of blue poppies seems to be getting smaller or it's not blooming, that's just an indicator that it needs more organic material. It needs more food. And sometimes we don't worry about that so much in our perennial beds. And so if your blue poppies are in your perennial beds, remember they are the ones who do need something to enrich their soil now and then for best bloom.
Have you ever divided yours?
I don't know. I may have years ago, but mine are self-seeding now.
Mm-hmm.
And so
nice.
I have many of them all around. And in particular, they've decided they should come up underneath the skirts of the rhododendron.
Oh, how lovely. Huh. So our first plant, and we realized we only have 3 minutes to talk about each plant, was Mechanopsis. And I was going to say, these plants are not necessarily in any particular order. They're just, yeah, the top 10.
So the next one is the daffodil.
Oh.
And Kitty's a daffodil specialist. I, for some reason, don't have many, although the ones that I really love are the small ones, the miniatures.
Mm-hmm. That are still blooming right now here in June. The sun discs are going like mad. Actually, you might have been talking about the early, early ones like the tete-a-tete. But what is so cool about daffodils is that for me, they start blooming early and they keep blooming through June. And there's so many different sizes. There's so many different shapes. Many of them are fragrant. And the next best thing about them is they're perennials in my garden. I don't have to fuss with them. And the ultimate, deer do not eat daffodils. There's only two plants in my garden that deer have not eaten. And one of them is daffodils. And I suppose I should put the other one on the list, but that's for the vegetable show. So daffodils are incredible. And if you think, oh, the only kind of daffodil out there are those big, you know, yellow trumpets, the King Alfred type. Oh, do think again. there's just, I think two of my favorites. One is Pipit, which is kind of a slightly bicolored, and it has the sweetest, most wonderful fragrance. So it's just, it's glorious. And then right now, the little tiny sun discs, which are maybe have a little bit of a fragrance for me, but what's nice is they're just tiny, intense spots of yellow. And there's nothing like yellow in a very green and gray climate to cheer you up.
So with a modicum of sunshine and average to good soil, you should be able to plant your daffodil bulbs in the fall and have daffodils for many years, and hopefully they would grow and increase, and so your little spot of daffodils would produce more and more over time.
I was going to say, I found them in two abandoned gardens up on West Chichagof in old mines, and these gardens had not been tended for ages. And those daffodils are still going like mad. So,
good indicator.
I love that kind of plant. Okay.
So the next one is one that is kind of a funny thing. It's the Livingstone daisy, and it's an annual. And it's very tender, can't take any frost, and so it's one that can come a little bit later to commerce. You could start it from seed, although I never have. But it's just one of those plants that, for me, I need to grow it each year. And I grow it in pots because it's a bit of a slug magnet, but it has the most vibrant flowers, and they only open when the sun comes out. So it's kind of like they're in their glory on a sunny day.
So I have to admit, I do not have a Livingstone daisy in my garden, and I probably would have some in the pots on the deck would be a good spot for it, and maybe I should expand my horizons and get some. Do they have, like, screaming bright pink ones?
They do. The thing that's difficult is I've never seen them to purchase in anything but mixed colors, so you don't necessarily know whether it's going to be a white one, the really screaming pink one, or the corally orange, or some shade in between. But they're, to me, they're just a fun adventure, and they don't take much. You can have a fairly small pot and put two or three of them in and keep them watered up, and that's about it.
Now, they're kind of succulent, aren't they?
They are kind of succulent. And the funny thing is about them, when you get the six-pack or the three-pack or whatever, they can look half ratty. I mean, because that succulent, they're a bit brittle, so they don't ship all that well. And if they got touched by something too cold, it could really, they look a bit ratty. But you don't have to worry about that. You just take them and pot them up with some, you know, basic Osmocote and decent soil, and they'll go for it.
So do you plant them with anything?
Sometimes I plant them alone, and sometimes I just put them in my whatever little deck pots that I'm doing. And I don't grow them down in my garden. They're exclusively on the deck.
In containers.
Yep, containers.
Yeah, I was thinking they might not tolerate that kind of moisture. They might really like the more drying sort of conditions in a container, or is it just that they like that slugs love them?
You know, I think it's more that the slug magnet issue, because mine generally sit out on the deck with no cover, so they do fine.
Okay.
Yeah, in the rain.
Okay, I'll go get some. What's the next one, Molly?
Primroses.
Oh, how could we not have primroses on the list? It's kind of like daffodils. It's like you have one name and it describes a plethora of flowers.
It's sort of cheating to have a list of 10 and put primroses as one of them, because there are so many different primroses, you really you really can't go wrong. And the primroses can grow in a wide variety of conditions. Some like quite a bit of shade and moisture, and others do better with more maybe regular soil and full sun sighting. They come in tall, all colors, short. They're great.
And they love our climate. Again, I mean, I think most of the plants on our list actually they pretty much like our climate in one way or the other, maybe just in the summer part of it. But a lot of our plants on our top 10 list are plants that it's like, hey, it grows really easy here, and the color variety is beautiful. The bloom time variety is beautiful. Go for it. And primroses, the other cool thing about primroses is that you have to divide them, and they self-seed, and so you get more. Yeehaw.
And there's so many different varieties. My Florin days are still just coming on, and all of the early primroses are long done by June, but the broad season. So look around for some different primroses if yours are already finished and you're thinking, wait, they're still talking about primroses.
Yeah, I think I had some blooming really very early. It was probably not March. It was probably early April this year. And then I will have some blooming in July and August. So that's pretty good recommendation right there.
Yep. So next on the list is nasturtiums.
Ah, that was when I realized of all the annuals that are out there, and there's a lot of really good annuals, I just love nasturtiums. They're actually probably the only plant on our list, yes, that you can eat and not die. So it has that little bonus to it. You can include nasturtiums in your salad, but again, is you get a nice color variety, you get different kinds of leaves, and they're cheerful looking. I think that's another big part of which flowers I put on this list is, do they kind of cheer me up and make me feel good regardless of the weather?
One of the other nice things about nasturtiums is they almost prefer poor soil, and they do need sun, but other than that, they are not picky, and the investment is very small because your best bet is to buy a pack of seeds, soak them overnight, and plant them where you want them to grow. So if you do nothing other than sprinkle some nasturtium seeds around, well, you want to do more than sprinkle. Yeah. You need to actually plant them in the ground. Once the frost free is passed, they're pretty tough, and you get a lot for a little.
Yeah, the two places I use nasturtiums, one is in the deck pots because you can get ones that are upright or you can get ones that are trailing, and I like to have both. And then I put I kind of put them in between vegetables too. They add something to the vegetable beds. I think they help bring in a few more pollinators. And, you know, I don't know if they actually discourage some pests, but I think mixing up your plantings always kind of makes things a little bit better for pest avoidance. But the Alaska variety is one with variegated leaves. But you had one that you were growing that...
Well, I bought one that was, you know, not the most economical. The packet was called Black Velvet, and we'll see what it looks like. Early on, when I started growing nasturtiums, the Empress of India was the main alternate one that had been selected out. It was pretty much just run-of-the-mill nasturtiums in the beautiful reds, oranges, and yellow blooms, either upright or scrambling. That was kind of your choice. Right. Then the Alaska variety got pretty popular. That's the variegated leaf one that you're talking about. But the Empress of India, I didn't find... was really very reliably different after a while. It seemed like early on someone had really selected that seed to be remarkably different.
Right.
And then later on, it didn't impress me.
Right.
And so there's lots of different colors now. There's apricot. There's...
Moonlight is one I like.
Yeah. And if you haven't ever grown them, don't worry about that. Just get the regular ones that are inexpensive, have a nice time, and take it from there.
Yeah, they're a nice one to do with kids because, like I said, they're not toxic. So if you have a child that you're still kind of teaching what's edible and what isn't edible in your garden, that's one that they can grow and plant and eat and admire.
And the seeds are big. They're big and clunky and chunky, and that's a really easy thing for a child to handle and visualize and plant. Monk's hood.
Ah, couldn't live without monk's hood. Don't eat it, though. It'll kill you. It is the best tall blue-flowered critter out there. Needs no staking. So if you're a delphinium person, and Southeast Alaska is a place to grow delphiniums, so big, tall, stately, amazing things. But they need staking, they need a bunch of stuff. So I found monk's hood to be, the lazy girl's tall blue thing.
I prefer to think of it as the tough as nails variety of tall and blue.
Okay, so it's tall and blue, it's tough as nails, doesn't need staking. And I've just divided a huge patch of it, and it seems to have been taking dividing quite well.
Right. It's a reliable spreader without being too vigorous.
Right. So it's not a thug, but can take care of itself and hold its own and spread a little bit.
It doesn't require a lot in the way of soil either.
Mm-mm.
And if you're not one prone to fertilizing, this is the plant for you.
And I have it in a place that only gets afternoon sun. So it doesn't need your best spot in your garden to look good. And I've seen a variety of really interesting, like, bees, and I've even had hummingbirds visit them. And this is like not a classic hummingbird flower, you know, it's a blue thing. But I've had hummingbirds visit them quite a bit too. So they don't only look interesting unto themselves and not need a lot of fuss and bother, but they look interesting to animals that add interest to your garden.
And they're kind of a midsummer bloomer. That's another thing I like, that they come on, and then it's a lot of our plants are spring bloomers. It's typical that we end up with plants that are spring bloomers because those are the ones that look the most appealing at the mm-hmm. nursery.
Right.
So monkshood, that's a good one.
It's an excellent one. And its Latin name is a wonderful name. It's Aconitum. But this one is poisonous. And I point that out, and I should actually let folks know that most of what we grow in our flower gardens is poisonous. So don't avoid monkshood just for that reason. Just teach your kids and your friends not to randomly eat things in your garden, and all will be happy.
Astilbe is the next one. Mm. It's another one of those plants that does very well in our climate. Comes in every color, just about, from purple, lavender, white, reds, pinks. It can be quite tall, you know, about up to a meter or 30 inches, something like that. Or it can be quite short and mat-like. There's a lot of different varieties.
There are a lot of different varieties. The only one that has driven me nuts is the one that spreads. The pink one, there's a few pink ones that, like, have very strong habits of running across your flower bed, so need some control. I kind of like the ones that are a little more static, the ones that are a little more moundy. They might send out a few little tentative, you know, shoots off to the side, but they're not aggressive.
So Kitty likes the white ones best. I like the deep red one best. And Astilbes do appreciate medium to more sun. They can take a little bit of shade, and they also are a little bit like the blue poppies. They want some nutrition. They want to keep that organic matter high around their roots.
Well, the reason why I like the white ones is because of the evening phenomena. You know, a lot of times we go out in the late evening or even early evening out in the garden, and, you know, some of the brighter blooms, you know, you're starting to lose the ability to discern that brightness and the color and all that. But what is so cool is the white flowers just are stunning in the evening. So have some white flowers, and Astilbe would be a good one.
Erythroniums. Mm. So this is one that a lot of people don't know about, and it's a shame because erythroniums are, you know, just like many on this list, very easy to grow. The one that most people grow in Sitka is one that looks like a little yellow lily bell. Mm-hmm. It's actually a corm or a bulb. It's very vigorous in terms of spreading. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have much in the way of pests, and it blooms quite early, and then the leaves finish up and it disappears. So it's a great one to fit in and around other perennials that are going to bloom and have the main show a little later in the season.
Right. It's a perfect sandwich flower. So it's the one to kind of stick in places where you do have some things that are going to come up and cover it. And it does, I need to divide it on a fairly regular basis. And, you know, just pick it up and pull the bulbs apart, and I'm not too namsy-pamsy about it.
They're tough.
And I'm thinking about slowly planting them actually along the trail to my house, because I have so many of them. And I just, you know, if they don't do so well in one spot, whatever, you know, they'll find their places that they can grow. But they're sometimes called trout lilies, sometimes called avalanche lilies. And they're available in commerce and probably from your friends that have them.
Indeed. So our next one that we have on the list is the fuchsias. Mm-hmm. Our fuchsias. Fuchsias, of course, primarily grown as hanging basket plants, but there are upright versions. You can plant them in your garden. There, you could look around and see in a sheltered spot. There are some that are hardy enough that they would come back after the winter. But most of us have the habit of growing them in a hanging basket, and that seems to highlight those incredible blooms the best anyway. And you can winter them over if you want.
Right.
But we kind of, most people consider them annuals.
It's like, I know that Molly and Charlie every year maintain their fuchsia farm, and it does super well. And so I have that as kind of my inspiration. But in the end, sooner or later, some point in the winter, I forget to water them, or I do something hideous to mine, and they die. And I like, oh, whatever. That just means I can go buy four little starts and I tuck them in baskets and hang them all over. And usually what I do with mine is I mix varieties. So I'll get four different varieties to put in the basket. And that way I get different kinds of flowers. And I usually have at least a couple. And this year I bought a completely different kind of fuchsia, which I don't know anything about. So I'll be reporting back on that. But fuchsias are beautiful. They like the shade. The semi-shade, at least, that I get on my porch. The only thing I've noticed they don't like is that sometimes the wind will get a bit much for them.
The other thing that they like, and it's something it's taken us a while to learn, is if you do manage to winter yours over, and we've killed many in the process of finding just our own pathway for our site, and that's different for everyone because mm-hmm. it's often not the cold that kills them, it's the dry. So you need them in a spot where they won't get too... where you can reach them and water right. them a couple times over the winter, but where they can be cold enough to keep dormant, but not so cold. So mm-hmm. it's finding that exact spot. Right. But at any rate, they do respond well to fertilizer, and I use liquid fertilizer. And if you have enough light and your fuchsias don't seem to be blooming, feed them up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mine are blooming right now. I haven't managed. I put them in their pots, you know, and then I kept them in the greenhouse for a little while to get them settled. They're definitely ready to come out now, but they look kind of pretty in there. I was actually thinking, it'll probably get too hot in there for them.
Right.
So I do need to move them out pretty soon, but it actually looks kind of cool having a few hanging, you know, ornamental baskets in my greenhouse. So I may get those out of there and just leave the petunias in because they will love it in there. They will think they're in heaven.
One of the bonuses of fuchsias is that the hummingbirds love to come to fuchsias, and when they're hanging, it's really easy to watch that.
Mm-hmm.
Those brightly colored flowers and then those brightly colored birds doing their thing together, yeah. hanging along the deck. It's really fun. So if you are trying to grow fuchsias and you find that you don't get through the summer with them, try and find a more sheltered, less sunny spot for them. Be sure you water them regularly. They mm-hmm. really do need the water.
Right. And do you pinch the blooms off?
I don't. I pinch the seed pod.
The seed
pod after it gets that far. Yeah. And keep that, it looks almost like a little fruit, like a little berry.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I really take those all off all summer long until I'm ready for the plant to get moving toward dormancy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I leave them on intentionally. And then I start withholding water late in the summer also, so that it's the message to
right.
the plant, okay, we're done.
We're time shutting down.
Time to give it up. And oftentimes it's hard to get them to the point where they have really close to dormancy when they're mm-hmm. still hanging around. So when it's time to actually move them in to save them from a killing frost, I like them to sip the frost, which is what I say, sip the frost, taste it just a little
bit. Lovely. Because
that encourages them into dormancy.
Right.
And then when they're done, just take the scissors to them and cut them back.
Mm-hmm.
Cut off all those branches, even if there's a few leaves and tiny blossoms left. And then they just go in and wait until it's time to bring them out. But you need, and then
water
them a couple, probably about three times
mm-hmm.
between when they go into the closet or the entryway and when we bring them into the house and hang them in the windows
so
in February.
I should make myself a little calendar. Maybe that would be helpful. Big fuchsia sign. Please water me now. We'll see how that goes. So do we have time for number 10?
We do.
Yay. So number 10 is a favorite of mine, and it's just started to bloom here in early June. And it is a viney one. So this is a kind of a different plant, and it's a perennial. And in this case, I'm going to tell you about a specific one that I'm very, very passionate about, and that's a Clematis montana. Now, many people would pronounce that Clematis montana, and... either way is good for me, but I grew up saying clematis, so by golly, it's going to be really hard for me to change at that point. What's nice about this particular clematis is it blooms pretty much nonstop. Mine's like covered with blooms for, a good 2 or 3 weeks, and then it stops, but I don't need to prune it. I don't need to do much of anything with it. And it grows very, very happily. Now, it's in a spot that gets full crazy sun. And when I first planted it, I dug down and I mixed a bunch of manure and a bunch of sand and then I put it in there and kind of let it go. I mean, I give that whole bed some compost, so it gets some of that. It's growing up against my woodshed. So it started out on a trellis and then took off from the trellis and started climbing the woodshed. And actually, it also started climbing the red osier dogwood that was next to it and anything else. And the one issue maybe with it that you have to watch is that it will grow underneath the cedar siding and it will pop the cedar siding off. And it will grow into the woodshed, and you'll find these cool little tendrils of clematis or clematis growing in your woodshed. But you know what? I can tolerate that nonsense because it is breathtaking when it's blooming. It's lavender colored with four petals, and it's literally covered with flowers.
So it's like a huge vine of purple stars almost.
Yes, I like that. It is a huge vine. It's a huge moundy vine of purple stars. And I would probably take out the red osier dogwood that's there because it's a dumb plant for where I put it. You know, I mean, it's a good plant. But putting a big kind of shrub in your flower bed is dingy to me now. I'm like, what was I thinking? But it's a good, it's something for my clematis to grow on. But yeah, it doesn't last all year or anything like that. But you know, when that bloom period is there, it's like a rhododendron time-wise, you know, or something like that. It's just like, it's intensely beautiful.
Well, we expect you have your top 10, and it may not match ours. These are just the things that, one, the theme is, of course, they're pretty darn easy to grow. Mm-hmm. They like our climate, and we like them. So we want to run down our top 10 again for you, and we'll let you know, we can say where might be the best place to get a hold of these things. So the first on our list was the Mechanopsis. That's the blue poppy. And sometimes they're available in commerce, but your best bet is to get them from somebody. If somebody won't give you a plant, ask them for seeds because mm-hmm. If you get a whole, they produce a lot of seed, and if you can get a handful of seed and sprinkle them around your garden, and you know, and right. we have the right conditions, you should have a few come up.
Now, I think the next one was daffodils.
Yep.
Very easy to get in the fall. You want to plant them in the fall. You can order bulbs online. You can get bulbs locally. You can probably even get some from friends that are they're digging and dividing. So daffodils are easy.
Living stone daisies. Again, these are the annual. You'll probably buy them at the nursery. There's really no other good way to get them.
Nasturtiums, and I might be jumping around a little bit. Nasturtium seeds are easy to get. I have seen starts in little four packs and things like that, but that's something you want to get in the spring and start a seed, so very easy.
Primroses, there's so many different varieties. You can still buy them at the nursery. They tend to be good ones. If you see them in your neighbor's yard around your neighborhood, ask for a piece.
Yes, I'm usually willing to share several kinds. Another one, monk's hood. Monk's hood's one you can either get from a friend or in from the local nursery. That one should not be hard to get.
Same with a stilbe, and it comes in so many different colors. You might look for the size and color you want. Or if you see them around your friends and they have a real good patch, they're pretty easy to take a piece off and get going.
So erythroniums, the trout or the avalanche lily, is one that you tend to plant in the fall, although I divide them whenever and replant them. That's one that usually you have to get order online, although a nursery may carry them, or do some trading.
Yeah, haven't ever seen them in commerce locally, so probably get them from your friends. Fuchsias, you know where to get those. And clematis.
I bought one at the local nursery. Very easy to get. Yep, might cost a little bit of money, but it was worth every dime. So that was our top 10 flowering things and where to find them. I hope you enjoyed the list.
For The Garden Show, I'm Molly Kabler.
And I'm Kitty Labounty.